Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Welcome back to All of It. Thanks for hanging out with us this hour. The mortal coil, a glitch in the time-space continuum, and a birthday party that seemingly never ends. These are the makings of Netflix's newest binge-worthy series, Russian Doll, which was released on February 1st. Starring Natasha Lyonne, who is also a co-creator, along with Amy Poehler and Leslie Headland. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
The series is a darkly comedic existential meditation on life's choices and, yes, death. The series follows Lyonne's character, Nadia, as she dies and dies again, each time ending up right back where she started in the bathroom at her 36th birthday party. The series feels part magical realism and part celebration of a grittier New York with a cosmic joyride thrown in for good measure. We are so happy to welcome Leslie Headland to the studio. Hi, Leslie.
Hi.
So you came aboard on this project. Amy and Natasha had been working on it for a little while.
Yeah.
When you came into it, how did they describe the project to you? And then what did you think, oh, I would like to add to that?
I think that one of the things that is my strength as a writer and a director is that I feel, unlike a lot of auteurs who I think see themselves as like the captains of ships mm-hmm. and the sole generator of material and energy and all of those kinds of things, I've always thought of being a writer and a director as a prism, as being basically like some sort of a crystal or a conduit through which a lot of energy and ideas and narratives go through me and into what ends up happening on screen. And so it was kind of a dream to have mm-hmm. two creators that already had so many of the themes and the characters and the meditations, and wanted to make, as they described it, an existential adventure show. and that I got to kind of be the George Martin to their Beatles. Like, I got to kind of go, like, I think this needs to be louder. I think this needs to go faster. I think this needs to be clearer.
This needs to come down.
This will come up. Like, you know, I think something that could help land this moment would be X. Or I think that, you know, if we want to cast Y, then we're going to kind of throw the audience off a little bit, and they're not going to suspect that such and such is going to happen. Like, it really was, I a lot of times explain developing this show with them like working on an album, so much more so mm-hmm. than like writing a script. I mean, of course, once we got greenlit by Netflix and started our writer's room and prep and then shoot in New York, it was, of course, very similar to a television show or an indie film. Like, you do fall into that linear production kind of experience. But the creation of it was one of the most freeing and creative things I think I've ever had the opportunity to be a part of. So,
on the creativity tip, this is a structure that's been used before. Someone dies, comes back, dies, comes back. It's sort of like the way Rashomon's been used a million
yes.
times. Different
oh, yeah,
perspectives,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
right? So what decisions did you make so that it felt fresh? Or that it felt like it belonged here?
The thing that really cracked open for us was when we started talking about them as loops as opposed to deaths, if that makes sense.
Loops, that makes a lot of
sense. Yeah,
that
to me, it like kind of clicked that bringing it from a, you know, I don't know, a, you know, there are so many amazing comedies that we referenced when we were first developing the idea, Groundhog Day definitely being one of them, but also Defending Your Life was another one, mm-hmm. you know. It's a Wonderful Life is one of my favorite movies, so that I thought about a lot as well. But it was really when I started thinking of it as a video game as opposed to a magical realism trope, but that these were loops that she was going through in order to get to the next level. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what if, as opposed to what if you were reliving the same day over and over again, or what if you've never been born, or what if in the afterlife you had to defend yourself? The question of this show became, what if life wouldn't let you move on until you had fixed something?
Because she doesn't die the same way each
exactly.
time. And she even tries to avoid the death.
Yes. Yeah,
on
yeah,
more
yeah,
than
yeah.
one
she
occasion.
She thinks she's got it a couple times and she doesn't. thinks she's figured it out, and then life is like, nope.
Nope, just nope. comes and grabs her.
Nope, nope, you don't. You don't have this yet.
So where is Nadia in her life at this moment?
She has just turned, quite literally, in the moment that you meet her at the beginning of the show, she has just turned 36, which is an age that she, and this is not a spoiler, she says it in the pilot, this is an age that her mother never made it to. So as a character that lost a mom at obviously a very young age, she doesn't have any sort of template, life plan, you know, experience of what it might be to have made it further than that. And that's a place that I completely relate with as someone that struggled with various different types of addiction. Like when I hit 30, I was like, 30? Like, I was like,
who was going to get here?
Who was going to make it to 30? Like, I was like, are you kidding? Now I'm 38 and I can't even believe the decade that I've had. I feel like a completely different person, you know? Like, but I do think that that's similar. And what I really related to, you know, as one of the writers on the show was that I was like, I really get what it's like to hit that kind of seminal age for whatever personal reason, whether it's 30 or 36 or 45. But when you hit that age and you kind of go like, I didn't think I was going to make it this far. I wonder what's going to happen next. And what's interesting is that she gets stuck in this kind of existential video game type looping reality where she has to, because she's a computer programmer and specifically a programmer for games, debug herself, so to speak, and figure out how to move on to the quote-unquote next level.
My guest is Leslie Headland. She is the co-creator, director, and writer for the Netflix show Russian Doll. It's interesting. The vibe is interesting because she is a computer programmer, yet she... if there's a 70s vibe.
Oh, yes.
Like, she's kind of got the combo Carly Simon, Linda Ronstadt hair with, like, a little Joan Jett with a tie.
So
and
true.
And her vibe is sort of...
Well, that's all Natasha Lyonne. I mean, like, that's, like, exactly her aesthetic as a human and the stuff that she's drawn to as an artist. So many of the references that we made very early on and that she made to me when I came on board was a movie that she mentioned many, many times was All That Jazz. She was like, I really, really want to do something that is a meditation on mortality, something that about, you know, as someone, I think I'm not speaking out of term to say this, but I can also say that for myself, I've also had this experience that she is a person that has kind of come close to staring down that barrel of mortality. And like I said, I have also had that experience in a non-public way. Yeah. But I also understand that, and that movie really connects with me the same way. You know, it's like, is what is your life? What is the performance of life? You know, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that was one of the things that started us off in that place, but also we just all, I think Natasha and I just both love the same movies, and those movies are usually dominated by men, like whether it's The Long Goodbye or All That Jazz, or for me, The Big Lebowski was a movie that I thought of a lot, you know, like, you know, that kind of like, you know, existential, like, you know, PI who's on the case to try to figure it out, you know, like a lot of that stuff. So it did make sense to us that once we started working and when I put together, you know, a visual lookbook and shared it with, you know, all of the department heads from the cinematographer to the, you know, production designer who built that incredible hero set where the party takes place to the costume designer who was also the Natasha's designer in Orange. Like when we were sharing these images, these were all movies from that era. And I think that that's just something that visually we all responded to, but also that we wanted to give specifically female viewers their own version of that story instead of having to insert themselves into a male protagonist by watching these awesome old films that we grew up with and loved. It's like, let's create a new template for them with a female character at the center of it.
It's also very New York.
Yes. Yeah.
Very gritty.
We shot here. Let me tell you something. We shot in New York. We shot in the East Village, whether they liked it or not.
Was that tough? I mean,
it was. No, I mean, it's a lot of night shoots. I've shot both my films in New York. Mm-hmm. It's very fun. New York is wonderful. It is also still New York. And so you have a lot of New Yorkers who do not care if you are shooting or not.
and are not and not pleased that you're not blocking their sidewalk.
That you're blocking their sidewalk,
even if it is Natasha Lyonne.
Even if it is. Although I have to say, she did give a lot of goodwill. Like, you know, yeah. I have never worked. I've shot a lot of stuff here, and I've never worked with somebody that got stopped as often as she did. Like, you know, I love you. What's up? Or even just people talking to her the way that they would talk to a friend that they ran into, mm-hmm. and I was like, "Do you know that person?" And she was like, "No." So they're like, "Natasha, hey, what's up?" You know, like I was like, "Oh, is that your friend?" She's like, "No, I don't know that guy. Seems cool though. Seems like a cool dude."
But that was important to you to just get that real grit.
Yes, yes. I mean, well, it's interesting because, you know, when we decided on Tompkins Square Park as kind of the, you know, snow globe fishbowl of the show. And that was really a Natasha Amy thing. Like that had already kind of been decided mm-hmm. before I got there. But as we leaned further into it, it was definitely in the forefront of our minds thematically while we were writing and while we were shooting, that we were shooting and writing about essentially hallowed ground. You know, mm-hmm. like we were exploring a particular part of New York that you know, can get over glamorized at times and can also get grittified. Is that a word? And we wanted it to feel kind of like both. We wanted it to feel like, yes, this is very New York. This is what New York feels like. This is what it's like. But it's also, I think, the New York through the lens of people that love New York. And hopefully we achieved that. I hope so.
My guest is Leslie Headland, the name of the new project she's working on, as she is working on, co-created, directed, and wrote. She's working on it. is Russian Doll.
Barely working, you guys. Just barely scratching the surface.
And it's very clear that the Russian Doll is about every time she opens up, there's another one and mm-hmm. another one and another one.
Which
and
is why I like to think of them as loops. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even our production designer, like, created essentially a Russian Doll of the sets and kind of the party being the center of it. And as you moved further out away from the party, all of the color schemes would change, all of the architecture would change. And we made our decisions about costumes, locations, and sets as a result of that. And so, but emotionally, that's also what she's going through. She's going from that kind of harder outer shell that we show everyone down into what Amy Poehler always called the tiny doll that's inside all of us. And that's kind of why I think she can't move forward. She has to get all the way down to that before she can get put back together again.
And early in the series, she doesn't understand what's happening to her.
No,
she's very. I want to play a clip so you get a sense of this is Natasha Lyonne at the party. After she's come back, she's just trying to figure out what's going on. Let's roll that clip.
Oh, I love it. We have a clip.
Maxine, I need you to help me. You're not helping me. You're not helping me at all. You're sabotaging me.
Will you stop acting crazy?
Oh my God, I am not crazy, okay? I am not crazy. You know, I hate it when people call me crazy. Look, all right, I get it, all right? I realize I sounded a little crazy, all right? I'm just defending myself here, okay? This is on her.
Or maybe you're just crazy.
She's not sure she's being it's gaslighting or if she's crazy. There's a sense of like she's lost control. And I felt like that was a part of the show, at least the part I've watched so far.
Yes.
I know what the end is, but I haven't gotten there yet.
I'm sad somebody spoiled the ending for you. I'm sorry. It must be a job hazard.
It's a job hazard.
Yeah.
I know.
Listening to that, what I thought was like, it's always a reoccurring dream of mine that the people around me think I'm crazy and I know that I'm not. And mm-hmm. the more I try to explain that I'm not crazy, the more crazy I look. So I was like, wow, we really kind of like, for some reason listening to it as opposed to watching it, I was like, wow, I really tapped into mm-hmm. that kind of terrible dread. But I'm so sorry. I feel like I didn't answer your question.
No, it's okay. We're having a conversation.
Okay,
it's fine. Sometimes conversations wander off.
Okay, good.
I don't want to, again, we have spoilers, not spoilers. She meets someone else who's having a similar experience.
Very similar experience.
And I love the tagline of the show because I think it really gets to the heart of it. The tagline is, dying is easy, it's the living that's hard.
Yeah.
How do we see that in this show?
I think that the show is meant to be, you know, a kind of emotional Rorschach test. Like, so many, the response to the show has been insane not just because it's so positive, but because so many different people have different experiences watching it. And so there isn't one right way to experience the story that we've told at all. But that being said, I think that one thing that we knew in moving into this season, and especially with the her de facto partner that she ends up kind of on the case with, was the idea that our darkest parts of ourselves have a tendency to try to isolate us from other people. The parts of ourselves that, whether it's that tiny doll or it's trauma or it's loneliness or it's addiction or, you know, whatever it happens to be, really does start to kind of push you into this, I think, emotional or mental headspace that you are alone and you are the only person that feels that way, and that there's something wrong with those feelings because they are so negative and because you're going through them alone. And so it was very important to us in telling this story to explore what it is like when you open yourself up to the idea that you are not alone in your pain, and that walking through life is a particular type of painful journey for everybody, and that the more we allow others into that story we tell about ourselves or the story that we're struggling with, the more identification we may feel and the less alone we will be. There's this, I'm going to get weird for a second, but there's a prayer that's called the St. Francis Prayer, which ends with like, you know, something to the effect of like, you know, for it is, you know, by understanding that I will be understood. It is by loving that I will be loved. And it is by forgetting myself that I will find who I really am. And it's kind of what I think the story of this season of Russian Doll is, which is that the more we focus solely on ourselves, the more myopic we become about our own damage. And it is others, like we do have to enter Plato's cave on our own, but it is others that give us the strength to do that. And while we may not want to save our own lives sometimes, or act in self-preservation due to whatever our, like I said, damage or negative thinking or background may be, if we can connect with others, we find that we're much more willing to fight for them than we would be to ourselves. And the last thing I'll say about that is another good kind of secular version of that is when you talk badly about yourself and your friend says, "Don't talk about my friend that way." Like suddenly the perception shifts from the self-loathing to caring about yourself as if you were another person caring about you.
The name of the show is Russian Doll. Doll.
It's confusing. People think there's more than one doll, but it's just one.
It's singular. Russian Doll. It's on Netflix. You can binge it now. It's really pretty fun, especially for New Yorkers.
I think New Yorkers will really love it. Yeah.
Leslie, thanks for being
with us. Thank you for having me, Allison.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.